Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air.
Refugees in America, today on Advanced. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining both myself and my co-host, Eva, in the studio today for our July Society article. Eva, we've never been together on an Advanced program before.
Well, I'm excited to talk about today's topic with you and to, you know, just find out more about refugees and what they have done for today's world.
It's going to be a great program.
Mm-hmm.
Eva, you are not new to Advanced, right? You're just new to Advanced with me.
Correct. I have been on this year, actually, a couple of times.
So our listeners should be familiar with you. That's fantastic.
I hope they like me.
Now, where are you from, Eva?
I am from Singapore.
Oh, I thought you were from Canada. We're a diverse place.
You wish. Well, I do like Canadian snacks, I have to say, like maple cookies. That's one of my favorites.
I like Singaporean snacks.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great. Do you think we're going to like the snacks from this refugee community today?
I have not tried, but I think I'm adventurous, so I might like them.
It's interesting because we are both basically immigrant.
We are. I always think about this. It seems like the world today is an immigrant kind of movement, you know?
There is a former Canadian prime minister who wrote a book that said, we think about politics all wrong. He said, like, the way the modern world is structured, there are two kinds of people, like people who are connected to the place they're in and people who could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real divide between people. And I think for many of our listeners in Advanced, like this isn't necessarily true, but one of the advantages of studying English to the point of being an advanced user is that you are basically becoming an anywhere.
It's
person.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
The language can take you anywhere. So you can become a global citizen, no? Citizen of the world.
Well, that's sort of the advantage, right? It means that even if you don't move from your hometown, you have the option of doing it.
Yeah.
And so you become more aware of what's going on in the world. And that's basically what we're looking at today. We're going to look at a specific community of people who moved to the United States following a war and sort of some of that experience. The title of the article is From Refugees to Community Builders. So what is implied there is that this group of people kind of came as refugees, maybe poor, without really resources or whatever. But then they sort of built a new home and have prospered and thrived in that new place. That's really kind of, I guess you would describe that as the American dream if you were American. But
that's true.
It's really kind of the immigrant story.
It is. It is the immigrant dream. To leave something that you thought was not as good as what you have today, and to build something that belongs to yourself.
Or in this case, you know, like a place where people are trying to throw you into prison and kill you.
Yeah.
You know, you're leaving for some reason.
It's true.
And then you manage to build a good life. That's kind of a thing we should all be aiming for, whether we're in our hometowns or not.
Yep.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll be an interesting reading. Listeners, we're going to divide today's lesson into two readings. One is a little longer than the other, but you will find both in your July magazine. Again, this is the Society article. If you don't have your magazine with you, I would encourage you to pause the program and get one because it's the easiest way to support us here at Advanced Radio. And more than that, it's a pretty good way to improve your own English learning experience. So, without further delay, let's jump into our first reading and see what it has to say together.
From refugees to community builders. One family paved the way for Hmong to move to Minnesota. Bill Herr, the 49-year-old Uber driver from Roseville, might tell you that he was the first Hmong baby born in Minnesota. Bill's parents, Dang and Shua Herr, were the first Hmong refugees to come to the state, an illustrious distinction confirmed by community members and historians. On December 5th, 1975, the couple and their two-year-old son, Bill's older brother, Tuvi, arrived in Minnesota, clearing a path for the tens of thousands who followed. The Herr family is proud of all that their community has produced, from an Olympic champion gymnast in SUNY Lee to the newest mayor of St. Paul, Collie Herr. Hmong American writers like Cao Kalia Young have enriched Minnesota's literary canon. Chefs Diane Mua and Ia Vang have invigorated our culinary landscape. It's not just what they do, politically or economically, but they've stimulated the imagination of American society, said Mina Lee, a history professor at the University of Minnesota. But somebody had to be first. It took one family to chart a course that helped change our state's trajectory. I'm very proud of what my folks were able to accomplish, to bring us here, survive here, and then raise us, said Tuvi Herr, now 52.
Okay, quick question for you, Eva, before we jump into this. I don't know if you noticed this. Well, Linda was doing that reading. And I do want to say thank you to Linda because I know she put in a lot of work to make sure she got the names correct or about correct.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm scared to say most of the names in here.
Me too.
How do you feel when people mispronounce your name? Do you tend to be offended frustrated? Or you really don't care?
Well, obviously when I was younger, I think I felt a little bit like, how come they can't pronounce a simple name? But as I grew older, I was like, yeah, maybe everyone just comes from a different background. They learn phonetics differently. Maybe their own mother tongue shapes the way that they speak English.
Like the way your mouth moves.
Yeah. The way they learn phonetics, I think that's different. Because like, for example, in English and in Mandarin, the way phonetics is very different. You know, like the A sounds, the O sounds. So I don't blame them. Like even my name, Eva, can be pronounced like Eva, Iva. I'm like,
well, especially considering it's a shortened version of your longer name.
Exactly.
Right? And the pronunciation of the longer name is different than the shorter name.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah,
it's
complicated.
So,
I, like you, am not, I don't tend to take offense or be bothered by mispronunciation of my names, but I'm always worried that I am offending other people by completely destroying the pronunciation of their names.
Yeah, that's fair.
Nonetheless, listeners, all that to say, if I am referring to the person by their job title here, it's not as an attempt to cause offense. It's just I'm afraid to say the name because I can't say it the way Linda does.
Yep.
We're introduced to a character named Bill here at the beginning. Who is Bill, Eva?
So Bill is an Uber driver from Roseville.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, surprisingly, he's actually one of the first Hmong babies born in Minnesota.
Now, this word here I recently learned, and when I say learned, I mean 15 minutes ago. Teacher Garrett told me the H is silent on this word. So it is just Hmong. Like you said.
Yeah.
Though, again, I'm sure the Hmong would have space to correct my pronunciation of Hmong. But there you go. So basically, we're told that his family, Bill's family, was the first family of this people group to settle in the American state of Minnesota. That's basically all we're told. So this is like the founding family of the Minnesota Hmong, basically. Bill's parents, it goes on to tell us, were the first refugees to come to the state. And this is pointed out here, that it's an illustrious distinction that is confirmed by community members and historians. So an illustrious thing means kind of glorious, wonderful, praised, right? Distinction means things that makes you different. And that this is confirmed by others basically means Bill has told the writer this, and then other people have been like, oh,
that's true. They're legit.
Yeah, Bill was not lying. He was the first Hmong baby here, right?
Yeah.
So other people have confirmed the story. This makes Bill's family special. That's the point. And then we kind of get into their story. So how did this play out? When did this play out? Tell us about it.
So they arrived in 1975, which to me is a surprise because that doesn't seem too long ago.
But it's actually a really long time ago?
No, it's not.
Kind of.
I would think the first settlers would be like the 1800s, or, you know,
I mean,
like
come
early
on.
19.
Bill was two and he's 49 in this article. It's quite a while ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair. Okay. You would think like, you know, to build a community it would have been maybe 100 years. You know, something like that. Because
yeah,
seeing how
you're thinking
old
America
like, is.
The colonial days.
Yes, correct.
The 19th century.
Yeah. So I think it's like so interesting that new communities can be built in the recent, you know, times. So they arrived with their family.
They came. Now, that's actually, this may be because I'm older than you, but that date 1975 is significant for me, not because it's not that long ago.
Okay.
It's because that's the end of the Vietnam War.
Okay, yes.
So basically, there's sort of this background that we're going to get into here, but the key to this background is actually the word in the title, refugee. So, you know, we've been using this word refugee and immigrant kind of interchangeably, but a refugee is one kind of immigrant.
Yep.
So specifically, what makes someone a refugee?
I'll say a refugee is someone who is taking refuge. So, you know, running
like
away
hiding,
from
seeking
something.
Safety.
Yeah,
right?
Running away from danger and looking for someplace safe to settle.
Yeah, so they've been forced out. And the context of this here is that the Hmong were kind of on the losing side of the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And so 1975 was when the Vietnam War ended.
Yeah.
Actually, the South Vietnamese government kind of collapsed. And so all of these people who'd been on the wrong side of the war basically had to escape.
Yeah.
And so his family were within that first wave of people who were sort of leaving as things fell apart,
yeah,
quite clearly here, right?
Yep.
So they arrived with their young kids, right? They arrived in Minnesota. And by arriving in Minnesota, they were clearing a path, kind of showing a way for tens of thousands of people who followed from their community.
Correct.
So once someone was there, others had an easier time, I guess.
Yeah, they would be like, oh, maybe it seems possible for us to also take refuge there and, you know, travel there.
They set up a store.
Yeah.
I don't know about Bill's family, but somebody has to set up a store that sells familiar products, you know, and then the community kind of starts to grow. So that's basically what Bill's family did. They established the first presence of this community in this new place. Now, their family is proud of all that their community has produced. So you were saying in a very short period of time, to me, this seems like a longer period of time because I have not been alive anywhere near that long. So it seems like it's more than a lifetime for me, but they're proud of what they have produced. And this is also kind of an important part of the immigrant dream, if you will, right?
Yeah.
Because ideally, immigrants, you want to be a blessing to the place that you immigrate to, because then you're welcome.
Yeah.
Right? If you are difficult or a burden in the place you are going to, things don't work out as well.
True.
But if you have worked productively and produced things that bring honor and glory to the entire community, not just your part of the community, you seem to be much more welcome. And that seems to be what this community has done. They've produced a lot for Minnesota and for the U.S. So what are some of the things they list there?
Well, firstly, they have a recent Olympic champion gymnast, and that's in Suni Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they have a new mayor of that place that they live in, St. Paul.
So they've become kind of part of the political system in the place,
like,
right?
Yeah, everything political, you know, sports, just, it's not them just trying to live there. It's like, you know, making a name for themselves, you know, making sure that they, like you said, you know, are a blessing to that place that they are in.
Yeah. You know, there's this whole kind of rule of thumb in economics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really hard, for example, to get people to care about the environment when they have very low incomes and are worried about having enough food.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Right? So, like, once you have enough food and you're safe, then you can start worrying about other things. And so what we're kind of seeing here is the measure of the success of these refugees, because they've come into this place. Obviously, they have jobs.
Yep.
Obviously, they're taking care of their basic needs. They have housing. But now they're entering the world of politics, sports. And then the next one they mention is like culture. So they mention like writers in particular who are enriching Minnesota's literary canon. Note that canon has two N's, not three. Yeah. So it's not N-N-O-N.
Yep.
Right? What is the difference between a C-A-N-N-O-N and a C-A-N-O-N?
Well, I would say both are weapons, but one is a, the one with two N's is more of a...
Like a big gun.
Knowledge weapon. No, the one with two N's.
Two N's? Oh, yeah. Not two N's together.
Yeah.
The C-A-N-O-N.
Correct. One is more like a knowledge weapon. Where it's a book... Books that are recognized as being the most important parts of literature. You know?
So this is a weapon in that we have that English idiom, the pen is mightier than the sword.
Yes,
right? Correct. Because you can spread ideas.
Yeah, correct. And okay. You can, you know.
But the three N with two N's together, C-A-N-N-O-N, what is that?
That is a weapon that we see
a big gun.
Yeah.
Basically.
Correct. When military uses it.
Okay. So we're talking then here about a literary canon.
Mm-hmm.
What is a canon? You hear this term when you make reference to the Bible, for example, like the biblical canon.
Yeah.
What is a canon?
So it is a collection of books that are recognized, you know, as being very important.
I think the key is it's like recognized by people who are experts or work in the field.
Yeah.
Like these are the books you have to read to understand this subject.
Yeah.
That's kind of the idea, right?
Correct.
So basically what it means is it's not just a book that's been written and published. They're books that are like award-winning. Mm-hmm. They're like used in school. They're like taught in university courses or whatever. They're important to understanding how literature works from this place.
Yep.
They're good examples of that. So they have added in this way, I guess you could say that's kind of like the fine arts, right? The ones you study in university. But they've also added to the broader culture of the community through their chefs.
Yeah.
And so they have invigorated the culinary landscape. When you invigorate, it means you give energy or power to something.
Yeah.
Culinary landscape, what's that?
Culinary landscape would... I think, you know, just the variety of dishes, the variety of food, whether it's fusion food or whether it's Hmong food, I would say that they probably brought their own local flavors.
So when I think of a landscape, you tell me if you agree or disagree here. Mm-hmm. When I think of a landscape, I kind of think of like a map of an area.
Mm-hmm.
Like what's on the land around this area.
Okay.
Culinary clearly means like the food. So when you invigorate the culinary landscape, I think of like if I'm in the office and I look at a map of the surrounding area, what kinds of restaurants are available to me? What kinds of food can I get? That would be the culinary landscape of this area. And if you invigorate that, it means like you're adding more choices, more variety, things like that. And then you mentioned fusion.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that. What's fusion?
Fusion is like a combination of two things or a mixture of a couple of things. So for example, I would say like I'm a fusion baby, you know, of Indian and Chinese.
Uh-huh.
So I can imagine that these Hmong chefs, maybe they bring their own culture, they bring their own heritage of the Hmong food. And after living in the America for a long time, they kind of like blend it together. Yeah.
Yeah. Like... you know, you get Korean kimchi, and then you put it on hot dogs.
Yeah, that's
right. That would be fusion, like a kimchi hot dog or
kimchi
flavored hot dogs.
Yeah.
Where it's mixing two
very
different traditions.
Yes.
Nice. Okay. So these are some of the contributions this community has made. It says it's not just what they do politically or economically, but that they've stimulated the imagination of American society. So this story of their success is the story Americans like to think about when they like to think about what America is. They like to think of America as this place where, you know, refugees can come and build a free life and then they contribute and life is better for everybody.
It's true.
Yeah. They're sort of participating in that way. It says, but somebody had to be the first. So this is taking us back to Bill and his family again, right? It took one family to chart a course that helped change our state trajectory. So when they charted the course, it means they sort of found the way to fit into the community, and then other members of their community could sort of follow their example and also fit into the community. Trajectory just means the direction you are going.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly this Hmong community has a very positive relationship with Minnesota. They're contributing. They want to add and build and, you know, be free and do all the American things. And that is what they're doing.
Correct.
That's their direction.
Yes.
Cool. They're very proud of this. Bill in particular is very proud of what his folks here meaning his parents, were able to accomplish to bring them there, survive, and then raise us. And this is, I think this is the older sibling.
Yes.
The older brother.
Older brother.
Yeah, that's right. Who is now 52. Yeah. Excellent. Let's do our next reading. All right.
How they got here. Tuvi was too young to retain any memories of fleeing Laos at the end of the Vietnam War. The Hmong had been crucial allies of the U.S. government, fighting alongside the CIA and rescuing downed American pilots in what has become known as the Secret War in Laos. But the Hmong's alliance with the U.S. would cost them. After Laos fell to the communists in 1975, members of this ethnic minority were targeted for reprisals. While the U.S. government accepted Vietnamese and Cambodians, it initially refused to open its doors to the Hmong, deeming them too primitive to survive here. The Americans, however, had vastly underestimated the Hmong's ability to adapt. This was a people who had fled persecution in China thousands of years ago and migrated throughout Southeast Asia, bending to survive in each place they called home.
All right. So, you know, how they got here.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the family here.
Yeah.
The kids obviously were too young to, as it says here, retain any memories of fleeing Lao. So they don't remember, you know, coming, basically.
Correct.
This does tell us, though, that when they're fleeing from Lao, even though they were, you know, escaping the Vietnam War, they weren't in Vietnam.
Yeah,
they were from a country next to Vietnam called Lao, L-A-O-S, here. So why were they involved in the Vietnam War? Well, it goes on to say the Hmong had been crucial allies of the U.S. government fighting alongside the CIA and rescuing downed American pilots in what had become known as the Secret War in Laos. Now, during the reading there, Eva, you asked a question.
Yep.
You wanted to know why these Lao people were fleeing the Vietnam War.
Yeah, when it's the neighboring country and not their country.
I think the simple answer is that when you have conflicts that go on a long time, they spread around. They affect everybody around them.
Mm.
And so in particular, in the Vietnam War, you know, a lot of rural area was involved in the conflict, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between rural area in Laos and rural area in Vietnam is probably not super clear when you're out in the jungle.
True.
And that sometimes intentionally, sometimes not, you know? So if Americans and South Vietnamese are operating in Vietnam and you are hiding in Laos, they can't get you, right?
That's true.
And then maybe they decide to secretly fight a war in Laos so they can go get you.
Exactly.
And I think that's what the Hmong were involved in.
Mm-hmm.
So
known as this secret war.
After the Americans pulled out and the war sort of collapsed, it was not good. It was not good for the Hmong people.
Yeah.
Because they had been on, you know, allies with the enemy,
yeah.
I suppose is the situation there, right? So it says that in our next paragraph, the Hmong alliance with the U.S. would cost them. And then how does it cost them? What does it
tell us? Well, after Lao fell to the communists, then all these people were targeted for reprisals, which we see is something harmful or violent that people do to punish you for something.
Kind of like revenge.
Yeah. It's like, last time you were against us, so now that I have the power, I'm going to do something bad against you.
I mean, the important thing here, too, is a term that was not marked in that sentence. They are an ethnic minority, meaning they're not the Laotian people. Right? They're not the predominant part of the population. They're like a small group.
Yes, very small people group.
And they were allies of the enemy.
Yeah.
So now, you know, they're not popular and they're having a rough time. What a good reason to flee the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened. I actually read this morning. I wanted to know what proportion of the Hmong population from Laos fled from Laos after the war. And they basically said, we don't know.
Okay.
But the estimates were that there were about 400,000 of them during the war. And then after the war, that fell to 100,000 to 200,000. So, yeah. So okay. a huge proportion of this ethnic yeah. group left. Now, today, most of them are sort of in China, in yeah. Vietnam, still in that area.
Yep.
But 300,000 to 400,000 of them are established in the United States,
yeah.
other countries, France, some are in mm-hmm. France, some are in Australia, mm-hmm. other places.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, this group, they faced this incredible pressure after the loss of the war. It tells us that Laos fell to the communists. They faced the reprisals. The U.S. government accepted Vietnamese and Cambodians
yep.
as refugees, presumably, mm-hmm. but initially refused to open its door to the Hmong. Now, you might think that's because there was not a real war there. It was a secret war,
yeah.
like an unofficial war. Mm-hmm. But it says, no, it's for much darker sort of reasons. They deemed them too primitive to survive in the United States. When you yeah. deem something, do you know what you're doing with it?
I would say you judge it by its cover, you know?
Yeah.
You
kind of decide
for yourself
that it is this type of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
You may not even know whether it's good or bad yourself.
You put it in a category.
Yes, correct.
You label it.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided they were too primitive. What's that basically mean? Well, presumably they were like hill tribes. So they
yeah.
were sort of living in primitive conditions.
Correct.
And they thought they would struggle to deal with washing machines,
yeah,
modern bathrooms,
correct. Not
cars.
Civilized enough, maybe, you know.
Maybe the idea. So this kind of unfair situation. However, they did eventually get in.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells us in our last paragraph there that Americans had vastly underestimated the Hmong ability to adapt. So this was a people who had fled persecution in China, persecution being, you know, similar to the reprisals they were escaping from
yeah.
China, right? Thousands of years ago, they'd migrated all over the place, learning to survive in each new place they called home.
Yep.
We're going to learn a little bit more about that tomorrow because mm-hmm. today we are out of lesson time. Are you going to come
yep.
back tomorrow?
I will.
That's fantastic. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us today. Unfortunately, we're out of time,
mm-hmm.
but we'll see you again tomorrow. Until then, I'm Simon.
I'm Eva.
Saying bye for now.
See you.